Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 7th, 2008. This week, we'll answer a listener's sticky question about cement. We'll tell you why sled dogs never get tired, and we'll find out how GPS systems may be prone to something called spoofing. But first, Suzanne takes a journey inside the musician's brain.
A new study suggests that musicians use their brains differently than other people. Vanderbilt University researchers matched 20 students who had an average of 11 years of musical training with students who had no musical training at all. The researchers gave them problem-solving tasks while measuring the activity of the prefrontal cortex of their brains. Clinical psychologist Brad Folley says this area is thought to be the brain's creativity center.
And what we found was the musicians had a more clear pattern of bilateral, so that's left and right, brain activity in their prefrontal cortex, that foremost part of the brain, than non-musicians did. And as a matter of fact, non-musicians tended to use more of their left hemisphere for these tasks.
He says musicians coordinate both hands while playing and often read music at the same time, activities which require both sides of the brain.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, our West Coast reporter, Karina Wu, explains how hackers could potentially foil GPS navigation devices.
The GPS receivers found in cars, cell phones, and all kinds of devices could be vulnerable to a new type of attack. That's according to Paul Kintner, director of Cornell University's GPS laboratory. He and his colleagues recently demonstrated how a GPS receiver could be programmed to send out fake signals in order to spoof a navigational device nearby.
Spoofing is making a GPS receiver think it's somewhere else, or moving in a different velocity, or having a different time than it actually is. And it's doing it in such a way that the receiver does not know it's being spoofed or attacked.
Kintner says, fortunately, there's no evidence that spoofing is being done now. It will still take a substantial amount of development work to create an operational spoofer. So, Kintner says there's still time for manufacturers to put security measures into their GPS receivers before the spoofers catch up.
Thanks, Karina. The Iditarod is a grueling dog sled race across 1,131 miles of Alaskan snow. But according to exercise physiologist Michael Davis of Oklahoma State University, it's common to see dogs trot across the finish line without any sign of fatigue.
The dogs would be perfectly happy to keep on going. For all appearances, they could do that indefinitely. If you are at the finish line of the Iditarod, it's not uncommon after 1,100 miles to see the dogs coming trotting across the finish line with their heads up and their tails up, and they look like they're ready to keep going. And we simply run out of Alaska. We're at the Bering Sea, and there's no place else to go.
So how do they do it? Davis explains that on the first day of the race, the dogs have metabolic responses similar to human endurance athletes. Their bodies burn fat, increase glucose production, and then draw on energy reserves within the muscles themselves.
They're exercising at a level that can't be sustained solely by blood-borne nutrients, and so they have to tap into their reserves.
But unlike humans, as the race progresses, the dogs actually start to replenish those reserves while they're exercising.
In human exercise, and well, virtually every other animal model as well, when you deplete the intramuscular reserves, you're done. And that's where the dogs differ. Even though they use up their intramuscular reserve, they're able to continue exercising at that same level day after day after day. That level of fatigue resistance at that level of exercise is really what started driving the whole investigation into metabolism.
Davis and his colleagues are now trying to uncover the mechanism behind this impressive metabolic feat. Next, Suzanne answers a sticky question from our listeners.
This week's Why Is It question comes from Tim Pendleton's 7th grade science class at the Chaminade College Preparatory School in St. Louis, Missouri. They wanted to know how the ingredients in cement stick together. Well, we've got a concrete answer from Michelle Wilson, manager of product development at the Portland Cement Association. She says cement is a mix of limestone, silica, aluminum, and iron that's processed at high temperatures. When the powdered cement is mixed with water, it reacts chemically to form sticky compounds.
The main two products that form are a calcium silicate hydrate and a calcium hydroxide, and that's the glue that you see in fresh concrete.
She says that this chemical process can be manipulated to change how fast the cement hardens. If you've got a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, you could win a Science Update mug.
Thanks, Suzanne. That's our show for this week. Next week, we'll tell you about a possible cure for milk allergies, what's happened to the plants of Walden Pond, why nanoparticles might not be safe for your skin, and why we really do feel our friends' pain. Until then, check out our Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. We've got a fascinating science story every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.